G'day everyone and welcome to the Talking Dice Podcast. Whether you're a dice maker, collector or just a tabletop RPG lover, we've got you covered. I'm Aaron, the host of the show and author of the Critmaker Guide to Dicecraft, now available on Amazon. Running a podcast in 2024 is expensive, with hardware, hosting, production and advertising. It costs us a large sum of money each month. If you like this podcast, please consider a one-time donation via Ko-fi, or if you love it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For details, please check out our website, talkingdice.co. If you want more information on the podcast or you're interested in chatting about the episodes, feel free to join our community Discord. The links are on our website. And on today's episode, we're chatting to Peter from Archival Dice. Based in the Blue Mountains outside of Sydney, Peter makes the most stunning polymer clay dice that have been taking the socials by storm. Peter, it's absolutely wonderful having you on the show today. And as always, let's kick off by chatting a little bit about role playing. What are you into now? How did you get into it?
What am I doing currently? I got into the tabletop role playing space by being what I thought was going to end up as a forever DM. I had a group of friends that were like, we want to play D&D and you are going to be the dungeon master. And I was like, none of us have ever played D&D. We have not been in that realm ever before. Why me?
You got thrown under the bus.
I mean, in some ways, I wouldn't be here today, I don't think, like in this space and in this community if it wasn't for that. So I am thankful. But at the time, it felt kind of like, oh, you want to play D&D, but you don't want to play with me. You want to play together. And I just kind of be the world that you're in.
That's a compliment, right?
Yeah, I let's say it is. I dove in head first. For some reason, the idea of playing a published game scared me more than taking D&D and twisting it into my own thing. So I became some sort of mad scientist homebrew monster.
Place to start.
It was great. And so I made my first whole world. I drew maps and characters, and I oil painted my first villain, and the games, they were in person, and one of the players was from Germany who would come in on Zoom and would have her on a laptop in the middle of the table. And it was really good fun. And so that led me to completely homebrewing two more games after that as well. So sadly, that first game kind of fell off pretty quickly. And then the other two games just kind of fizzled out with time. But yeah, so I started as a forever DM, just homebrewing these crazy things. And then eventually, my now fiancé and his friends had a very long-standing game of D&D. It might have been 3.5. I can't remember. That came to an end, and they were like, all right, time to start up the next game that's going to take 10 years. And they let me come along. So now I'm playing a Pathfinder game.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I've got a witch.
Another one of these D&D's not good enough for them parties, you know?
I think they just had a very long experience with D&D, and they were ready to try something a bit different.
Yeah.
A bit different, because their game went for so long.
As they do.
Yeah.
And so you're playing a witch.
Yes, I'm playing a witch, and she has a little snail familiar.
Oh, wow.
Who's like the size of her fist and goes around looking at things, listening in. It is really cute. We got our first ever like Hero Forge models.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they're really cute, and we're trying to convince the rest of
them. I love getting in there and trying to make my characters or make other people's characters.
It's so fun.
And it's so much easier than, you know, actually, you know, pulling up Blender or something and trying to do it the hard way.
Yeah, no. I always, when I started my homebrew games, I would like suggest to people like go on Hero Forge and just mess around. Just like give me some visual representation of your character, or, you know, find art online that you kind of relate to or something like that, just so you can like visualize who you're playing, because I feel like that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, I guess I'm quite a visual person, and I find I can't get into the zone at all until I know what they look like.
Yes, same. And but I feel like dice is also a big part of that.
Well, yeah, but I do the same thing with everything. It's like, oh, I'm going to start a new business. Well, I can't even think about the business until I have a logo.
The colors.
The colors, yeah. once I've got all of that, then I can think about it and then I can, mm-hmm. you know, get into the headspace. And I often end up in that analysis paralysis of, you know,
yes.
Oh, I can't do anything because I don't have a logo. And I know that's so contrary to how business is supposed to work. And
yeah, I think, but it is helpful because once you get those little puzzle pieces and you fit them together and then all of a sudden it opens up everything. You're like, yeah. Oh, now that this fits together with this and now I can have this whole thing.
And it's exactly the same with role-playing, you know?
It is, at least for me. Like, some people are out here just like, yeah, I don't know, I've got brown hair. Yeah. And I'm like, that's it?
Yeah, that's what you get.
That's all you know?
That's what you get, yeah. Brown hair, yeah.
Yeah, I have eyes.
Yeah. One of those, you know, faces.
Yeah. But other than that, we have the same group of people. We have a one shot that we kind of do every now and again.
Oh, cool,
our current DM has a young baby. So if things are getting hard that month or something, we'll just kind of put on a one shot instead. So we can still get together, but he doesn't have to do all the thinking and the planning all of that. So I have an aunt Noel.
All right,
I think it's also Pathfinder. She's a fireworks technician alchemist. Yeah. Yeah. And she just causes absolute chaos. And so I was like looking up all of the fan art for like aunt Noel's and trying to find the cutest, friendliest looking, scary, creepy little girl aunt Noel. And I couldn't find one.
Yeah.
And I was tearing my hair out for ages. So I had to try and draw one. Myself, it was terrible. So, you know, trying to play something without having that visual representation of my character was almost drove me a little insane, I think.
That's really challenging. But so you started as a forever DM and you've ended up as a forever player.
I will DM again. I will.
I would love to give it a go one day. I just I think I talk myself into a rabbit hole and I'm like, oh, I couldn't possibly, and then I've got to know everything, and it's just how my mind works. But
that was my thing with not wanting to play a published game, was that I felt like I would have to know everything to do with that published game, every possible, because it's written down, therefore I could know it, and therefore there are right answers to the questions, because they could look up the players could look up the published thing and be like, she didn't tell us that.
Yeah.
But with a homebrew, if I didn't know the answer to something, I just made it up. And well, it worked.
Well, our DMs run we're on our second major campaign, which is a prefab campaign. We did Beyond the Witchlight, and now we're doing Dragonlance. And
Dragonlance, yes.
Yeah, which is, you know, they're both huge campaigns. And I have a lot of appreciation for what he does, because we never stick to the script. And I think he makes most of it up anyway. So the trick for us is stay away from the source material, because, you know, chances are like he's thrown it out the window 6 months ago anyway. You know, and so we'll loosely come back, you know, some of the main campaign points. But we just take him on these wild adventures to places that definitely aren't in the books, and you know, somehow every NPC has a name and a personality and a different Cockney accent.
Oh, beautiful.
But it's hard to compete with.
I can imagine.
But so how did you get into dice making from that?
Well, for one of the homebrew games, I was the DM, but one of the players was very unsure of what to do, so I told her to take the urchin background, which comes with a little mouse.
Right, yep.
I don't know why, they just get a mouse.
Oh, that's cute.
And so I was like, I will play as your mouse, and if you ever get stuck, I'll help you out. So I made a little mouse character that was just there for like emotional support. She literally never did anything. She just existed on paper. And I was like, well, I need some dice for this mouse. Because I just had...
Of course you do. Yeah.
I don't even remember what dice I had. I think I had some dice that I got off of a dice company that mass manufactures them. And I was like, this mouse is a paladin mouse. You know, she's really cool. She grew up in a church. She's an urchin mouse. And I was like, I pictured these white marble gold dice, and I was like, surely someone's made them. So I was searching for ages, and
were
I couldn't
they really
find
little,
them.
Were they really little dice?
they were little tiny, like little grains of rice. And I was like, I want those dice so bad, but I couldn't find them. I had such a strong picture of them, and I was like, I have to make them.
Yeah.
I have to make that set of dice. And then I started going down the rabbit hole of YouTube and Instagram and looking at everyone's dice, and I was like, oh my god, this is a lot. And I lived in a two-room apartment or flat. It wasn't even really two rooms. The door in the middle didn't shut.
Yeah.
And it was me, my now fiance, and our cat, and I was like, I do not have the space to make resin dice. I can't do it. I literally have nowhere to do it. So that was the next big step. I was like, I can't find the dice I want. I can't make resin dice. And so then I just was like, there's other things. And so I found faux stone dice. Bought some of that to try. The stuff that I had a 30-second working time.
which, that's always what you want in the beginning, yeah.
That is the perfect way to start. Didn't have a pressure pot, didn't have anything, just kind of thought, you know, I'll see what happens. It went okay. I sold some sets. It was a problem. And then I decided to just try polymer clay because people make such cool things out of polymer clay. Surely I could try making dice. And so I had a mold off of Etsy. I had a rainbow of clay in front of me, and I just started very uneloquently shoving polymer clay into my expensive silicon mold, and then putting that thing in the oven and just crossing my fingers and hoping that I got some dice out of it. And I still use that mold
that's awesome.
Today.
I mean, on the plus side, the silicon is up to the heat, so that's okay. But
I made sure, I Googled it like in the middle of the night. I'd wake up in a sweat, like, is the silicon going to work? And so I would like, make sure, and I'm like, it's like 230 degrees. And I'm like, okay, my dice are not being baked that high. They will be okay. But yeah, it worked. And so then I made dice, and whilst it's not the dice exactly that I pictured in my head, because they were resin dice that I was picturing, I've definitely gotten very close to making what I pictured, and that makes me very happy.
You know, in my mind, you know, when I hear that people do things other than resin, I'm always like, why do you hate resin so much? I don't.
It looks very scary from the outside.
It is really scary, and I've got to say, you know, I wish I'd had at points at, you know, at certain times the foresight to go, you know, like don't start with resin. There's plenty of things that you can try out first. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, something like polymer clay, if I'd wanted to just get started into dice making, I thought would have been, well, now I think like that would have been a great option. But
yeah,
it's like anything. I mean, you can do it, but doing it well is another thing that takes a whole lot of practice and time and effort. And
yeah, I was not doing it well in the beginning. Not at all. It was definitely something that I've...
Find me a dice maker who does, please. And let's have them on the show. I want to hear what
interrogate
the perfect...
them, figure it out. What's
the perfect dice maker? I mean, if you're not experimenting and you haven't made a whole lot of mistakes, you know, are you even a dice maker?
You know, are you even making anything...
Yeah, exactly.
Even making
art.
I think
it can't be art. No,
no. You have to. It has to have some sort of struggle behind it. I think to have that deep meaning behind it is like, worked for this.
Yeah. But you mentioned that, you know, you were doing some drawing and stuff. Do you have you had any background in other art? Do you have you dealt with any other mediums? Do you what other artistic ventures have you had?
Oh, at this point, it might be easier to list the things that I haven't tried.
Yeah.
I'm sort of one of those people that see something and think, I can do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm filled with some sort of unfound confidence when it comes to artistic ventures where I'll give anything a shot. I'll try anything. One of my favorite art things growing up was mosaics.
Yep.
You know, in primary school, I was bringing mosaics for show and tell, like some sort of 7-year-old grandmother.
Yeah.
Long Stitch, I was a fan.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, no, literally nearly everything I've tried. I really want to try lino cutting next.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep.
Because I got this like little stamp, make your own stamp kit when I was trying to figure out my packaging for my dice.
Right.
Yep, and it came with this like really cheap, really soft lino in it for you to cut. And it just kind of like bent out of the way and like shift. So you couldn't get like nice crisp lines. So now I really just want to get some of that professional lino strength stuff.
Right.
I just want to make something. I just get little itches of like, oh, yeah, I'll make this giant cross stitch, or I'll quilt that, or I've got prototypes of dice bags that I want to make. I've got a crochet project always on the go. You can't stop me. I'll get into everything.
You're just an art and craft all rounder.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I'm, let's not say I'm very good at it. Like I'll try something even if I am very bad at it. But if it like lights a fire in me and makes me happy, then I'll keep going to try and nail it down, because it's so fun to make stuff.
See, yeah, I have the maker bug, but not the art bug.
Well, it's in your name.
No, I know, but it's like, you know, I'll try and find how to do something technically perfect, and then go, yeah, I know how to do that now. It's amazing. You know, and so I'm technically good at everything, but you know, I don't take the years it takes to, you know, to actually develop the art of it, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, that's why I think there's two sides to everything. There's like the person who just makes but doesn't know what they're doing or how to do it, and then there's your side. It's like, no, you know how to do it. You just don't.
Yeah, it doesn't always go together. That's not to say I'm not artistic. Like, I mean, I guess over the years I've done a lot of graphic design and things like that. And that's always been my interest, like digital art and stuff. But you know, I think I love the idea of it. Like, I love making things with my hands, but I would rather, you know, someone give me a pattern or you know, and go, yeah, there you go. Look at that. I did that. You know.
Did it. And that's all fine.
Go
and
you
good.
Aaron. Like, you know,
like, yeah, and that's still some, like, still doing all the technical stuff. Like, that's still creative, just in a different way. We've all got different talents and strengths and stuff, and not many people could do what you do, and not many people can make art, and not many of the people who make art can do the other stuff.
And not many people are making polymer clay dyes, which
been so many people in the last week.
I think they're coming out of the woodwork.
That's
because you're getting so popular. Like,
you
laugh about this, but I've spoken to a whole bunch of dice makers, and I said, I'm going to have archival, and they're like, oh my god, I love archival's dice. And,
oh,
you know,
god.
I think you got a shout out from, was it the Dice Gin?
I got a shout out, thank you, from the Dice Gin and from Fighting Chance Studios, which both of them massive fangirl moments. I clipped the podcast and sent it to all my friends, like, look at that.
And from two incredible dice makers as well.
Oh, my God.
You're making waves.
Oh, thank you. I've just been, it's been insane, because I've been kind of alone. Obviously not within the dice community as a whole. It's very welcoming and lovely, but I've been alone in the medium for almost 2 years now. There's been a few people like a very long time ago who did it, and their historic posts are still on Instagram that I was constantly going back to and being like, are you still around? Are you going to come back? Like, I'd love to talk to you. I've been alone for so long, and it kind of sucks, because when you see it all the time in the dice community as a whole, like, someone will figure something out and everyone benefits from it. Like, someone figures out a new technique and they teach it to everyone else, or someone figures out this type of resin can do this crazy, like, devoured dice wisps. Like, it's just so fun watching everyone work together, and I've kind of been missing that, like, because no one else was doing it, and I didn't have anyone to bounce ideas off of with polymer clay specifically. Like, I had so many people that were so lovely with sanding tips and pottery wheels and all of that type of stuff, but when it actually came to making polymer clay dice, I it was just me, and I had to figure out all of my problems by myself and celebrate all of my little triumphs kind of by myself.
And do you find, like, you know, I mean, I think you're gaining a lot of traction in social media. Like, I think that's definitely, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's maybe it's been going on for a while, but
I think
that's a key as well. And I think you know, the more it's coming up on people's feeds, the more people are going, oh, I could give that a go.
Yeah, I think with the people that have started doing it this week, a lot of the comments of people like, I have seen this before and you've given me the push I needed, and cool, I'm glad, because everyone that's gonna start trying it out and they're just gonna bring their own stuff to it, and they're gonna bring all of the experience that they have, because all of the people that are doing it I think have done resin dice, and they do resin dice, and they're really, really successful at resin dice, so they're gonna bring all of that knowledge to polymer clay, and I'm excited to start learning off of them.
Yeah, and it's always nice when, you know, something comes up in your niche, you know, and you go, oh, someone's doing something different, like, you know.
Yeah.
And there's even chances for collaboration. Like, people talk about competition, and I get a bit upset about this because, yes, there's competition, but, you know, competition's not always bad.
I am so excited. I heard from one of the makers, at least, that people were sending them negative messages,
right? Yep.
Saying that they were copying, I assume me, and I felt horrible. Like, unless someone is like, I have 100% replicated archival styles, and I'm marketing them as archival styles,
same style, same colors,
same colors, same everything, archival dice in the name. Like, they're not copying me. I welcome people to give it a go. I put up a big fax thing. Like, ask me any questions about polymer clay, and I've got that pinned on my highlights on Instagram. Like, I want people to give it a go, and I'm so excited to see what we all do. Like, there's so many, you mentioned collaboration, like with polymer clay, it doesn't really go bad. So I was thinking that we could, the people who are interested in making up polymer clay dice, there's even some type of thing that we could do where we could make a cane, which is you like mix up the clay in the specific colors or patterns or something, and we could technically make a big cane and send a little bit to each person, and we could each make a die from the same cane, but like in our own dice style with our own fonts and our own colors, and like that could be cool because that's something you can do. You can't like share a resin pot together.
I'd also be interested too, because I think it depends what's in the polymer clay, like whether or not it would react badly with resin, but there could be some crossover there too.
There is a dice maker who does polymer clay blanks and shells them with resin as Dice Monarch.
Yeah.
So like that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But I mean, that's another cool collab as well, you know?
Yeah. Like, and I think she has another person do the resin shelling, so it's that is a collaboration. It's pretty awesome. I'm just so excited. Like, I was maybe a second worried in the beginning, like these people that are doing it are much bigger than me, tens of thousands of followers bigger than me, and you know, maybe I'll become irrelevant or something like that, but that was quickly overtaken by excitement and the wanting to share.
I think it is a challenge when you see someone who's, you know, got 10,000 followers or whatever. Like, yeah, they're going to make a few more sales, but you just need to keep on, you know, being awesome.
I think we all have something special about us, and that's why, you know, there's so many resin dice makers.
Yeah,
and everyone is so cool. But you're all making resin dice, so it's not a problem.
So one, I love makers making dice out of things other than resin. I've said that a lot of times on the show. But, you know, two, and it's what I do with this program as well, is, you know, the artist behind the art. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you took all the same colors and you took all the same medium and you mixed it all together in exactly the same way, you're still not going to get an archival dice.
No.
You know, it's not going to happen.
No.
You know, it's like two people painting the same picture, or, you know, it's just not going to happen. And I think that's, that's the joy of why there can be so many resin artists and all
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and they can have their own fans and you can have your own fans and, you know, it's a big harmonious community. And look, I mean, in Australia, you're like the only one I know of. So
I think,
I mean, it's a very small pool here, but still, you know,
it's growing and it's so exciting. No, I'm so excited.
I mean, I'd be interested seeing some of your dice at, you know, some of the conventions and stuff like that.
Maybe.
Oh my God, it's so much fun.
Yeah. I'll let someone else vend them. I'll be like, here you go. I was so sad. I missed out on, I wasn't able to go to Supernova this year, which is where most of the dice makers sell in Sydney. And I was so sad because the year before I went and I met so many of the people that I've been speaking to online every day, and I was able to meet them in person. It was so lovely.
Archival Dice. Tell me about the name.
So I am a archivist by trade.
Okay.
Trained archivist. it's something that I've been passionate about for over 13 years now.
Yeah, wow.
I knew I wanted to make that dice set that I wanted to make, and I knew that I was going to start with Paul McClay and Faux Stone. And once I got all that together, it's kind of like, well, what do I call it? What am I doing? And I needed to visualize it all before I could really do anything. And I spent months thinking about what am I going to call it? What am I going to do? What am I going to be? And so I kind of just like started thinking about like people who are like naming their companies, their maker businesses out of things that they love or things that they are passionate about. And I was like, well, record keeping is pretty dull.
Yeah.
That's not very cool.
Record keeping like, dice.
Record keeping dice. And then I was like, I can name it after my cat. And then I just kept going back and forth about it. So I just ended up with archival dice. And when I thought about it, I was like, wait, there's something there, because I started instantly like picturing my packaging. I feel like packaging is something that I really enjoy getting.
Yeah.
When you order something from someone.
Yeah.
I recently bought something that was like too expensive for what it was. It wasn't dice. It was nose strips.
Right. Yeah.
To help you breathe better at night. And they were more expensive than they should have been. And they were just in a bag. No, nothing.
Oh.
Just shoved in a bag in my letterbox. And I was like, oh, that's not fun.
That's no fun.
But then you get some other type of package and it comes in a box and it's got some type of nice note inside and a sticker, and it's like, oh, okay, the person behind this kind of cares about it. It's just not someone in a big warehouse chucking it in, throwing it out. And so once I came up with the name of Archival Dice, everything just sort of fell into place, and I could picture my logo being a stamp with Archival Dice written around it with my favorite die, which is a D8 in the middle. And my packaging is all like brown craft paper with stamps that I one day will lino cut my own. Stamps that I've gotten offline that I hand stamp onto every page and every package, and wax seals and date stamps.
But see, back to you being an arty person, like I'm like, oh, I really want to make my own stamp. So I just, you know, I
want to make my own paper too.
It was easy because making a stamp is easy. I just use my laser. Like I laser cut rubber. There you go. Done. You know.
You can laser cut rubber. That's so cool.
Yeah. You just do a rubber stamp. Easy.
Oh my
you know,
gosh.
Like I don't have to worry about all that exciting stuff like, you know, engraving and cutting and.
But no, that is so cool. Maybe I'll have to hit up you.
Yeah.
For something good. If I try it and I can't get the lines crisp enough, I'll just be like, hey, this is what I want. This is what I tried to make.
Yeah.
You can make the more precise version.
You know, it's funny, and talking about packaging, it's like, I'm like, do I tell this story? Anyway, but there's a company in Australia that does underwear subscriptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're called Nobby. And Nobby are pretty popular do you call it the underwear scene? I don't know.
The underwear scene.
So it's like you pay a subscription each month and you get undies in the mail or mm-hmm. underwear if we're anywhere else in the world.
Undies.
And it has the best packaging ever. So every month there's like they have a different artist, right? And the artist creates the overall design, and then they apply it to the fabric, and then it comes with a sticker made by the artist, and it comes with a postcard made by the artist, wow. and a little blurb about the artist. And then even the bag on the outside usually has, you know, some kind of element of that month's artist spotlight or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's such a random one. But you're right. Like, you know, I was subscribed to that for a while at some point, and you're like, oh, it's so exciting. They've come in. Like, what's the design?
It's
who's
so
the
exciting.
Artist?
Exciting. Yeah. You know? I think I like to say it's like, it's an experience.
Yeah.
And like, I like to think, and I've had people tell me so, that buying a set of archival dice is like an experience,
because yeah.
it all ties together, and I want to keep adding to that. Like, I keep thinking about elements that I could add in to make it feel more like archival dice. Like, it's so fun, and I think of something and I'm like, oh, gotta figure out how to do that, or where to get that, or what I can add to it. It's just, I think packaging is a big part of my identity.
That whole experience. And, you know, it's definitely something that's been chatted about a bit recently on our little Discord as well. I think a lot of dice makers are in the same boat, going like, how do I elevate my product? Like, my dice are great, but yeah, like, how do I build that experience as well? And I think that's, you know, like, that's super key to, you know, to having those recurring customers too, because people want to, you know, they want to go, oh, I love that package last time. So, what's the next one going to be like? And, you know,
I
imagine, you know, getting a cup of tea and having a little opening ceremony and,
you know. Yes. Sam Bell and Mages, the absolutely fantastic team over in Singapore.
Yeah.
They picked up a set of dice for me, and they did an unboxing video in the back of a moving vehicle.
All right.
Filmed it and put it on a story, and I was like, that's fantastic.
I love them. I've loved all their videos and their content. Yeah, really, really quite fun to follow on Instagram. The shenanigans
so
they get up to, and you know.
and the creativity of their brand presence is just insane. Like, I have I don't know where it is. It's on my shelf up there. I have one of the boxes that their dice come in, and their packaging is insane. It's covered in all of the food from their areas, which is like the whole idea of like Sam Bell. And it's just, I love it. It's like, you're getting a little piece of them.
Yeah.
Every time you get their dice, and I love that.
Yeah, I think that's so much fun. And, you know, I think a lot of the good dice makers do it well. And, you know, I think it's something that everyone will think about. I mean, you know, I don't sell dice online. I do sell them at conventions occasionally, and they come in a little black velvet bag. It's not that exciting, but I've had people even then at conventions go, oh, I love the little bag. Oh, it's like a little jewelry, you know, like.
But also, you've given them still an experience, because they got to meet you and they got to see the dice, and like, that's still really cool.
But see,
like,
perfection to me is, oh, they've got their little bag of dice, but they've also got a book and maybe a dice making kit. You know, like, that's the holy trinity for me. So
that is a good trinity. The product and how to make it.
Yeah. How are people finding out about, you know, archival dice? Is it just through socials? Is it word of mouth? Like, I feel like you'd be getting a lot more word of mouth these days as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it used to just be my post on Instagram, but now with all of the new people trying out polymer clay dice, I've had some tags. Some people kind of being like, thanks for the inspo and stuff, which is really lovely. And I found, you know, just interacting with the dice community as a whole and commenting on other people's dice posts and sharing them, and everyone reciprocates. So, you know, if I love sharing dice that I really like but can't purchase, and so they end up thanking me, and then sometimes they'll share one of my posts, and someone will follow me from that. So it's all just we're all just helping each other out.
I like how organic that is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, doing it the other way is a challenge. And I mean, like, I've noticed recently, you know, Dispel Dice have been doing an awful lot of advertising. I would actually like to talk to them on the show at some point. I think that would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, like we talk about, you know, mass manufacture and all that sort of stuff. But I'm kind of also interested in how do you get that big, and
how do you
still do it at that point as well? But, you know, they've been doing an awful lot of advertising online as well, I've noticed. So it'd be nice working with that kind of budget, as opposed to
advertising budget.
I know a lot of small makers and stuff like that. Like I was putting up some ads for my book, you know, a couple last night, and I said, oh, just, you know, let's try $10 a day or something. And Google's like, are you sure? Most people are spending at least $280 a day.
Oh my God. No.
I'm like, I don't think you understand what it's, you know, like Google to be an author, you know, and rely on that for any kind of income. So
yeah, it's kind of just like shaming you. Like,
yeah.
What do you mean you don't have $280? Don't you want
that was literally the meaning the way it said it. Oh,
yeah.
Everyone else is doing it. Like, it's like peer pressure.
What, you have no money?
Like high school peer pressure or something.
Yeah.
Everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, it's like on Etsy when you put your shipping to free, and it's like customers are more likely to buy something that has free shipping. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't.
Exactly. And it's a frustration I've had with Etsy in the past as well, and they'll actually give preferential treatment to companies who do offer free shipping, and that's amazing if you're, you know, charging $200 or $300 for a set of dice.
Yeah, no,
you know,
I had free shipping turned on for my first 2 years of having my store open, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I turned it off.
it's a money sink, and look, I think if people appreciate your art, then they'll appreciate wherever it's from.
Yeah,
you know, like we're in Australia. That's what it is. And there are, you know, some incredible dice makers in Australia.
There are.
And I think, like, as word of that gets out, you know, like there's some, you know, some big names here, like Dire Fox and
Devoured and Dice, and
Devoured and Moonshiner, and like there's some incredible dice makers here. And I think, you know, people who really appreciate the art form, you know, will appreciate that, well, it does have to come across from the other side of the world.
I do actually need to get it here somehow.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately it's not free to cross an ocean, so.
No. I could always just kind of shove it into the price of the dice, but I want to make sure people know what they're paying for.
Yeah, it'll come with time, you know, like finding out that equilibrium. But yeah, as I said, I just think it's kind of on the community, and it's us as well to kind of say, hey, you know, like, yes, we're in Australia. Yes, it's going to take longer than 2 days to get there, but damn, it's worth it. You know, like, like my art is worth it. And my art is, you know, something that you're not going to just get in another state in the US. I apologize for picking on the United States, but you know, you talk to any dice maker in Australia, or, you know, it's like, okay, well, 60% of my customers are in the US.
It's so true. It's so true.
60% of my book purchases have been from the US. So, you know, I've got to be realistic about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the same respect, you know, you've got to appreciate the art and what goes into it, and, you know, the time and effort and the geographic boundary of it all, you know.
exactly. And it goes the same way with us. Like, I've got so many dice that I want to buy from overseas, and I'm just like, that's the shipping. That's the cost of it.
Yeah.
Because they come from wherever they're coming from, and that's cool, because then I can have dice in Australia that I can say they were made in Singapore, they were made in Europe. Like, It's cool because that's where they came from. It's part of the story of the dice and how I now have them.
Yeah. And I get a little kick out of that with the book when I look at where it's been sold. I really enjoy, I think more so than the numbers, I like looking at where.
Location.
And
yes.
Like the first time I sold a book to Japan, I was like, oh my God, that is incredible. Like,
yes.
I now have the best selling dice making book in Japan.
Congratulations. Yeah.
I saw one recently went to South Korea, and one went to Finland and the Netherlands, and just, I'm collecting countries, and I really like that. There's something about the global appeal of dice making.
Yes, I think some of my favorite locations that I've shipped to that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that was Iceland, Kazakhstan, and Thailand. Those three, I'm just like, someone in that country has my dice?
Yeah. And love them, you know?
Yeah. It blows my mind. Like, it's so fun being like, looking at a map and being like, my dice went there.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's a cool thing, and I didn't realize how interesting it was until I started looking at those metrics. And now, yeah, as I said, now I don't look at the sales anymore. I'm like, where did it come from?
Where did it come from?
Oh, it's another one. Oh, it's another one in Australia. Oh,
yeah. I need a scratch off map.
Yeah,
so I can like people are like, oh, all the places I've traveled to. It's like, no, not me, my dice.
Yeah.
It needs to be like countries and then like each US state.
Yeah. I get it. Like it must be a nice feeling, just especially knowing people are playing with them.
Yes.
I know when I was talking to Raquel from RG Dice Boutique, and she's an incredible, incredible artist, and her dice are incredibly expensive. Like it's not even, you know, there's no apology to that because they take so long.
They take so long, yeah.
But when I was chatting to her and she's like, yeah, like people don't tend to play with my dice. They kind of put them on a shelf. And she sounded a little bit sad about that. And and I agree, like there's there's the utilitarian benefit to that. Mm-hmm. You know, like you want your dice to be played with and looked at. And, you know, you want someone to be having a cracking good adventure.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like
their characters going through trials and tribulations and joy and all of that because of your dice, you know.
Because of your dice, yeah. I like to think about the memories that people make with the die. Like even if it's just, oh, it rolled a 3 when I really needed it to be like a 20 or whatever. Like that's still cool. Or like it rolled a natural 20 at this really crazy moment and this big thing happened. Or like a commission I just worked on was a DM. Getting them for his Dragonlance group. Yeah. And it was so cool. And I'm just thinking, like, are they playing in person? Like every time they come together, like this group of dice that I made together get to come together and roll at the same table and then go away again. And will they use them in more campaigns? Like, it's just like, it's so fun to think about what your dice are doing. And yeah, I kind of get that pain of, they just put it on a shelf and look at it because it's like, no, use it. Now, roll it. It won't break.
Now, speaking of pain, I hope Andy from Fighting Chance isn't listening because the videos they post about the dice smashing. And I'm wondering if that's a question you get asked a lot as well, is how, you know, how sturdy are polymer clay dice?
I mean, I haven't tested them with a hammer. Maybe I should
do a collab with Andy and you can like both
Fighting
be smashing
Chance
them
Studios versus Archival Dice hammer
I'm
test.
Gonna, I'm gonna I will make that happen if you're interested.
But oh yeah. No. I don't think I could personally take a hammer to anything that Fighting Chance Studios has ever made. They're the reason they're the reason I really decided to start making dice is I was looking for dice makers and I found them and I was like, they're making actual clay dice. I can make plastic clay dice.
Yeah.
So I couldn't take a habit to it, but I could take a habit to something that I've made.
That's what I mean to yours. But
I could try it out. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Because I mean, polymer is quite like I've also played with polymer clay, not with dice, but it's a very hardy material. You know, I don't think it's something you need to worry about shattering if you drop it off the table or anything like that.
No, and I people ask if I've like play tested them and if I've noticed any wear and tear. I haven't. I have a set that I use and I roll it hard. I roll it in a dice tray. I roll it straight on the table. I've rolled it on the floor. It bounces.
Yeah.
And all of the corners are just as sharp edge as they were when I made them. But yeah, sure. I'll hit them with a hammer.
No, do it. But tee it up with Andy. I think it would be amazing to, you know, have both getting hit at the same time.
Yeah, like a split screen, which dial crack first.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we'll make it happen. Now, you mentioned that you, there aren't a lot of polymer dice makers out there, but are there any other dice makers that you get excited when you see pop up on Instagram?
Yes.
or TikTok. I always ask TikTok and everyone says no, but
I find with TikTok that when I follow people, I never remember to go to the following page, and so I just never see them again.
Yeah, yeah. It's not set up very well.
No, it's just made for you to look at new things. It doesn't want you to look at the things you've already looked at, because that's old. Got to look at new things. Yeah.
Whereas I constantly go back to the, you know, the dice I've seen and the dice makers I've seen. And
oh, yeah. On Instagram?
All the time,
I make heavy use of the favorites function.
Yep, yep.
And sometimes when I'm just like, I just need to look at something that's going to make me real happy, I'll just go to my favorites, the sorting favorites tab, and I'll just scroll through and just soak up all that joy. But I have four makers that fill me with a lot of joy recently. So the first one is Devoured Dice.
Oh, yes. Yep.
They've been one of my favorite people to see what they're making and also to talk to in messages. We swap D&D stories quite a lot and just talk about dice making, and it's really lovely. And there seems to be some sort of Australia Post portal between our mailboxes. It's fantastic. We'll send dice and they come to the next day. It's the best. But yeah, Devoured Dice, aka the Wisp Master.
Well, I was going to say, Devoured was lovely when I was putting my book together, and you know, it contributed some photos as well to the book. Aww. So yeah, that was, I had some really good interactions there. So fond thoughts about Devoured Dice.
Yeah, no, every time we chat, it's fantastic. And they're currently doing a lot of these sets that are inspired by a D&D campaign that they were in, and also D&D sets made by a campaign that they are either running currently or about to start running.
Yep.
And it's just so amazing watching these kind of stories and these epic moments like come to life in dice form. It's fantastic. And every set they post, I posted a story once where I was like in public on a train, a packed train, and I must have looked insane because I had my phone up to my face and I was just zooming in on the picture that they had posted, because the worlds that they make inside their dice just blow me away every single time. It's fantastic. The next person that is Conflux Art.
Okay. Yeah.
I cannot put into words the magic that I think that their dice hold within them. They're like mystical marble looking galaxy. Ugh, you have to go check them out. Please, please do it. Please go look.
I need to go and check it out. Yeah, again. Yeah, beautiful.
I just can't. I love them so much. And the weight of their font just does something to my brain. It makes me so happy. Conflux and Fighting Chance Studios are the top of my dice saving budget list. I have this little, I just put a little money aside, and whenever that amount is enough to buy a set, and the next time that one of them has a shop sale, it's something is coming home with me.
You're not the first person to tell me that, you know, Fighting Chance is on their bucket list, their dice bucket list.
I have no idea what set from either of them I want.
Yeah.
Because I just want to own a part of their art. I need it. I need it. But yeah, so Conflux, I can't even describe. You have to go look at it, and I'm sure something will pull you in and just completely take over your heart, because it's amazing. And then there's Covens and Cottages. She's a florist, and she's just the sweetest person making the sweetest dice. She always puts a little bit of sparkle in there, and it's just, her dice bring me happiness.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I don't want that to sound cheesy. I mean, like, when it comes to dice, like, I want dice to make me happy.
Yes.
Or sometimes angry. Like, I want, you know, like, sometimes I want dice to. Yeah.
For powerful moments.
But either way, I want dice to convey an emotion. Like,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, I know some people love mass produced dice and stuff like that. You know,
that's fine.
Like Chessex dice are very collectible and all of that sort of stuff. But I've never felt kind of the joy holding a set of those than I have with some handmade dice that either I've made or someone else's. Or
yeah, there's something special about them, I think. But yeah, Covens and Cottages, I have their D10 shape is just a is just so satisfying.
Right.
So my witch dice palette, I have all of the D10s and the percentage dice are just covens and cottages ones. I just love them so much. And then last but not least, it has to be Infernal Foundry. I know they recently also got a shout out from someone else, but I've absolutely enjoyed watching him experiment and make these crazy epic dice that I cannot fathom. the way that the ink, the red ink and stuff, has just been so excited, and to watch all of that.
Infernal's another one I really want to have on the program.
And yes.
The interesting thing there, and I've caught myself doing it before, is thinking that he's an established seller of dice, but
yeah,
he's in this, you know, it definitely wants to master the art before going, mm-hmm. you know, before going mm-hmm. to the public. And I look at the dice now and go, well, I want them now, you know?
Like, no, yeah, please, right now. Like, I don't know. I know that he's working very hard to get everything together, and we've been yep. talking a lot in the background about packaging yep. and website and all that yep. type yep. of stuff. But, like, I don't know the person that I'll become when the shop launch happens.
Yeah.
Because, again, I don't know what set of dice I want.
Yeah.
But I
yeah,
do know yeah. that I want all of them.
Yeah.
So whoever else is online at that time yeah. will be competing with me, adding to cart everything at once.
it'll be like the Australian toilet paper riots. You
know? It will be exactly like that. I will be there with a cart full, and I will run to the checkout as quickly as I can, because yeah. I can't tell which one I want.
Yeah.
They're all just so fun and interesting in the way that he can take. Again, I kind of, it goes back to people saying that people copy things, but he'll like take inspiration from someone else's set, and he won't copy it. He'll just try and make something inspired by it, which is super cool to see. Like the set, the Everott set that he currently tried to take inspiration from, using like weeds from the side of the road.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And he made these dice that look like a piece of art, and I'm just like, what the heck?
Yeah,
it's so fun.
Definitely a dice maker that everyone needs to follow,
for sure.
You know, and again, I think that first shop drop's going to be fairly hotly contested. So,
for sure. Even if it's just me there, still hotly contested, because I'll be fighting myself.
He doesn't know it yet, but he's 100% going to be on the program at some point to talk about the journey thus far.
He doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be here.
He's probably saying to himself in the background, yeah, but I'm not actually a dice seller yet. I don't care.
It's like, okay. This is for dice makers.
This is talking dice. Your dice talk. So. Look, I mean, it's been so exciting talking to you, and it's always good having another Australian on the show. I know it's such an international community, and
it is.
I've got to say, I've found it a lot harder to get Australians on the program. We're a shy bunch, and I don't know why that is, because Australians are not generally known for being that shy.
Yeah, we are a bit out there.
And once again, I apologize to my listeners, you know, who've had to try and understand what we're saying the whole time. I've heard when two Australians talk, it, you know, it gets complicated accent-wise. So.
It's so funny. I never think that we have an accent, and then you talk to someone from like America specifically, and then it's like, oh my God, can you say no? And it's like, what? What do you mean? We all don't talk like no.
I was chatting to someone on. Well, it's happened a couple of times now where I've been chatting to people, and they're like, and I'm like, am I saying your name right? And they're like, I don't mind. It sounds so lovely with your accent anyway. I'm like, what accent? I don't have an accent, but like,
no,
we do. And I keep threatening to get a New Zealander on as well, and to have an Australian and a New Zealander, because a lot of Americans think they have the same
accent.
They're
the same. Absolutely not.
Yeah, and get the two in a conversation together. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And I think we may have to put, like, you know, subtitles or whatever.
can you do that? A transcript, I guess?
I do a transcript, but, yeah, we might have to just have a video or something where people can read the subtitles. So
I really wish I could like turn my accent off so that I could perceive what we sound like. Like I want to hear it. Everyone says that Australian accents are so interesting, and I don't know. I look forward to the comments on my accent. I look forward to it. I think it's super fun. Like,
yeah,
does it sound cool?
Anyway, well, if this was YouTube, I'd say, yeah, leave your comments down below.
But leave your comments
down below. Let us know. Do you like Archival's accent? Let us know.
Thank
on
you.
the Instagram you. Reels, which we'll post at some point. So.
Oh, no.
Awesome. Look, Peter, it's been so lovely chatting with you. I've had a lot of fun today. And
me too.
I know we've covered all kinds of topics, but I think we've mostly talked about dice,
which
is unusual on this show, I've got to say. But it's good.
It's
I like it.
It's been a good time. We've spoken a lot about other people's dice. We've spoken about my dice. We've spoken about your dice. We've had a great time.
And everyone, please check out Archival Dice's new website at archivaldice.com. And don't forget to follow them along on Instagram. Thanks so much, Peter. I've had a great time.
Thank you. You're so fun.
And that's all we've got time for today. So thank you so much for listening to Talking Dice. And if you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Talking Dice, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a big thumbs up and leave a review. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/talkingdice if you'd love to help us in the best way possible. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Talking Dice. Goodbye.